In 1842, just 8 years after the Port Phillip colony was established in Victoria, two Aboriginal men became the first people to be hanged in Melbourne. Those men were from Tasmania. They were convicted of the murder of two whale hunters in the Western Port area after a wild spree on the run in country Victoria. Their names were Tunna Minowait and Mallboy Henna, and they were brought across from Tasmania by the Governor, George Augustus Robinson. How they came to be in Victoria is a long and a heartbreaking story. Late last year, Melbourne City Council voted unanimously to establish a permanent memorial to those two men, and they'll vote again in April on what form that memorial will take. Historian Claire Land was asked by Melbourne Council to write a research paper on the two men, and here she takes up their story.
You get a really strong sense of them out of the documents, really. And not forgetting that Truganini was one of the people that was involved in this whole thing, and she was tried for murder along with the men. Tunna Minowait and Mallboy Henna are depicted in the or are kind of recorded as being quite different in personality. They came from different clan estates in Tasmania. Tunna Minowait had a lot of sadness in his life. He witnessed the Cape Grim massacre. He was only 11 at the time. He witnessed the activities of the Van Diemen's Land Company, and he escaped from Robinson prior, actually, in Tasmania, but he did end up with him for about 10 years. And Mallboy Henna is depicted in a drawing by Thomas Bock in a watercolour, and in that drawing he is holding a firebrand. He also has a particular hairdo and a particular use of ochre, which suggests that he would probably have been involved in or being educated as a manager of the land using the firebrand. And so, you know, they all really are humans and did have amazing and very haunting experiences in their lives. You have to wonder, well, why were they in Melbourne? They're Aboriginal people from Tasmania. What were they doing in Melbourne in 1839? And how did they get into this much trouble? they were brought across here by George Augustus Robinson, who had been the protector of Aborigines in Van Diemen's Land, mm-hmm. and succeeded in being appointed as the chief protector of Aborigines in the Port Phillip district. He actually proposed to bring all the remaining Aboriginal people from Tasmania who lived on Flinders Island at the time across to the Port Phillip district. There were Aboriginal people living separately from Flinders Island, and that's a very, very important part of the story. But he wanted to bring all 89 remaining Aboriginal people involved in the protection system over to Port Phillip. This struck some note of anxiety with the mainland authorities because, of course, of the well-known war, the land wars in Tasmania. So Augustus Robinson managed to bring 16 people with him, and the five people who were tried for murder were part of that group.
So what were you able to establish happened to them? How did they go from being brought here by Robinson to waging this frontier war?
Well, that's part of why they were so sensationalised in the press at the time, 1841 and 42, is that they had been associated with the protector, and he'd brought them over. His argument for bringing them over was that they would be helpful as intermediaries with local Aboriginal people. They did strike up friendships with local people. Tunna Minowait spent 6 months touring the Western District with George Augustus Robinson just before taking off into the bush with his four kin. And at that time, he was helping to take testimony about the frontier violence in the Western District. And I just wonder if that had a big impact on him, because it was when he got back from that six-month journey of investigations that he decided to take off into the bush. Truganini was part of the group that took off into the bush, so there were five people: Tunna Minowait, Mallboy Henna, Truganini, Planabina and Pityarunna. Pityarunna's husband had disappeared the year before in 1840, and he's never been found. I think that this group partly went out looking for him. Truganini had been out before looking for him, and this is the kind of original contribution of the research I did, which is to suggest that Pityarana's husband, Probalatna, was one of the reasons why they went out into that area.
Because they knew he was out there somewhere.
Yes, and the first incendiary action that they undertook, I think, was just after they'd learned that he had been shot and who had shot him. And they then proceeded to steal a gun. That's one of the first things they did. And then they headed straight down to where they heard that he had been shot. And I present the evidence in the report. It's very hard to draw conclusions, but I guess the main conclusion that I did draw was that they had many reasons. Each of them probably had a variety of reasons for doing what they did, and this could have been one of them. They did steal guns. They had more than enough guns for five people to use. They had managed to get hold of a cast for making up to 50 bullets at a time. So they were pretty serious about their intentions. They burned down huts. They didn't actually kill anyone until they came across these whale hunters on the property of a mining site. So then there's the question, well, were they after the whale hunters or were they after the manager of the mine, who may have shot one of their relations? But they were at large for 6 weeks. Numerous and growing parties were sent out after them, and there's lots of dramatic accounts of near capture and so on. So it was of interest at the time, and it was the biggest story in the news at the time.
Does it make you wish you knew more about their motivations and what was behind their decisions? Because I imagine seeing those whale hunters, they might have known who they were.
Yes, that's right. And this really is the key question that a lot of historians have wanted to know. I mean, community people have felt for a long time that it must have been about the whale hunters and the whale and the seal hunters and the men of the sea who had visited those coasts and had abducted Aboriginal women. So there were histories of violence there. There were histories of co-presence as well that shouldn't be forgotten, and that includes the eastern Bass Strait Islands, where many Aboriginal people of Tasmania today descend from. But, yeah, there were histories. And if you look at the whale hunters, well, it was whale hunters who perpetrated one of the most notorious massacres of the Western District. And Tanaminawait found out about that massacre at the hands of whale hunters when he was out with Robinson in the months prior to this, to these events. So it does make you wonder, well, did they know these men, or did they know men like these men?
You said you've uncovered new information about their exploits while they were travelling. How was that for you, finding out all this extra information?
Oh, well, it's incredibly fascinating and important. I guess the thing that happened as well when I started to put together the possibility that Probalatna might have been the sixth person in this story, he was actually an artist. And so I looked up a book belonging to my partner, which is about Aboriginal artists of the 19th century, and it turned out that Probalatna was the creator of the only known surviving artwork by an Aboriginal person from Tasmania from the 19th century, and there was a picture of that that watercolour that he made in this book. So that was a really important and really sad moment, because, I mean, it only adds to the tragedy and the sadness of knowing that this artist was probably just shot and dumped in the bush. But it also added to another element to why this particular set of events is highly historically significant.
They could be portrayed as great freedom fighters driven to extremes by their circumstances. Why aren't we more aware of these fighters in history?
Well, it's interesting because at the time of these events, they were, of course, very well known. 5,000 to 6,000 people turned out to witness their execution in a sort of fun park atmosphere. Well, it did turn a bit sour because the inhumanity of their execution and the way that it was bungled and done in a very painful way in the end.
What happened?
Turned it into something sad. Well, the gallows was very poorly constructed and didn't perform its function in an efficient way, which meant that Morboy Hina was strangled rather than and hanged. So that was the beginning of the sort of public feeling against capital punishment, which was eventually won, of course, in the 20th century.
I guess now, through your research and through the persistence of Aboriginal people in Melbourne who've commemorated the place and the time that they were put to death, that now Melbourne City Council intends to build a monument to those men. What sort of memorial do you think they deserve?
Well, I actually wrote a discussion paper on this for the City of Melbourne as well, and there are some instructive examples by artists around the world and in Australia that start to be able to deal with these sorts of painful, complicated and unfinished stories. So artists like Fiona Foley, Jonathan Jones and Brooke Andrew, those sorts of Aboriginal artists are dealing with monuments and memorials and not and kind of reinventing them. So they're not just statues these days. They can be something more arresting than that. And then when you look to examples of other very complicated and grave histories, monuments to different parts of the Holocaust, the sort of monument that could be smart and significant enough to do justice to this kind of story.
Historian Dr. Claire Land. We will hear more about the exploits of Tunaminawait and the rest of his group in coming weeks here on Hindsight. And Claire's report and all the details of the stories you heard today are on our website. You can always download or listen online as well. And leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for joining me for Hindsight today. My thanks also to Louis Mitchell for production. I'm Lorena Allam, and I'll be back with you next Sunday at 1 here on RN.